Good morning, sir. We are definitely so esteemed and excited to be able to speak with you. And of course, for the benefit of both our viewers and listeners, you are, of course, the Right Honorable Secretary of State of Defense, Michael Fallon. How are you today?
I'm fine. Please just call me Michael.
I would feel a little bit strange doing that, but with your permission, I will do so. So, will Mr. Fallon suffice?
Whatever.
Okay, I'll call you Mr. Fallon. I'll feel much better. So, of course, you said that you're doing excellent today. I've actually made my way in from Kent. And you are, of course, the MP for Sevenoaks, and you've just gotten re-elected. How do you feel about that?
Well, very pleased. I've been elected MP for Kent, for Sevenoaks in West Kent for 20 years now, so it was very rewarding to have my share of the vote increase in each election, although the election overall wasn't quite the success that we wanted.
However, you did actually get 64% of the vote this time round.
You've really done your homework. But I've been there a long time, and I've been able to help a number of people. I'm reasonably well known, and very proud to be in that British tradition where you are a minister of the Crown sitting in cabinet, but you also have to have constituency work, constituency duties as well.
Fantastic. Now, of course, September 29th this year marked the UK's 350th nuclear deterrent submarine patrol. For the benefit of those that are unfamiliar with that, can you explain a little bit more about its significance?
Yes, we have a deterrent, a nuclear deterrent, kept in our submarines, nuclear missiles, to make sure that our enemies, anybody who's thinking in the ultimate, most extreme circumstances of messing around with Britain, firing missiles at us or whatever, they must always be in doubt as to whether or not or how we would fire back. We want our adversaries, our potential enemies, to be unsure. And that's why we maintain a continuous submarine patrol out there, undetected, carrying our nuclear missiles to deter any enemy that might be thinking of attacking us. Now, you might think that was a fairly remote possibility, but just you've seen in the last few months, you've seen North Korea firing missiles across Japan. We can't tell what the future will hold, and we owe it to our children to keep this country as safe as possible.
Most definitely, and I couldn't agree with you more. Now, of course, this leads us to yet another question that I had prepared. With the increasing number of attacks being carried out, as we can see most recently in the UK, what are some of the key challenges that the government currently faces?
Well, we face the challenge of terrorists. We've seen more terrorist attacks now, half a dozen this year. Others that have been prevented by our security services. So we do face this challenge of Islamist aggression through these terror attacks, and we have to deal with it. Now, we have a program at home of tackling radicalization, whether it's in the schools or the colleges, the mosques, wherever it is, dealing with extremism and hate and making sure that these people are prevented, if you like, from radicalization. And we have to deal with it abroad. A lot of these attacks are either directed or inspired by Daesh terrorism in the Middle East. And there, our armed forces have been at work helping the armed forces of Iraq to tackle Daesh in their country.
Of course. Now, of course, speaking of helping abroad, are there any plans to further extend abroad to help out other countries that are in need of defense, as the US does sometimes?
The US does around the world. It's much bigger. We have the fifth biggest defense budget in the world. We have to keep our own people safe, but it's also right, as a leading country with highly respected professional armed forces, it's also right that we answer the call from the hardest hit, islands hit by a hurricane, a country affected by famine or whatever, or a very fragile democracy affected by insurgency like Afghanistan. Because what we've learned is if we don't respond to that call and do what we can to help, then the problem affects us eventually through mass migration, through terrorism, through insurgency and so on. In the end, the problem will affect us. So yes, we do have armed forces, and we have them on operations today in over 20 countries.
Fantastic. Now, you mentioned helping abroad, and particularly countries that were hit recently by natural disasters. And the government was actually faced with a lot of criticism in regards to their response. What are your thoughts on that?
I thought it was a little unfair. We had actually a ship on station. We put a ship into the Caribbean every year for the hurricane season. RFA Mounts Bay was a ship equipped with helicopter, land-moving equipment, Royal Marines, food, water, was there on station to deal with the hurricane. Now, of course, she couldn't be on every island at once. She got to Anguilla, she got to the British Virgin Islands, and we supplemented that with a huge effort of flying in more troops, heavier planes, and eventually sending HMS Ocean, our flagship, with more helicopters and personnel. You can't send planes immediately into a hurricane while the hurricane is going on. But let me assure you, you know, we put, I think, nearly 2,000 service personnel into that area. And, you know, they were engaged in everything, restoring power, guarding prisoners in the prisons, getting food aid distributed, and helping to rebuild people's lives.
Fantastic. Now, moving on to slightly a little personal thing, not your business, because we don't want to know that. But since you became the Ministry of Defense in 2014, what are some of the successes that you can personally look back and say, wow, I'm glad that we achieved that?
Well, first, we've started to increase defense spending again. There were cuts 6-7 years ago, but from 14 onwards, following the NATO summit, we have been increasing our defense spend. Now, we've had to cut back public spending in a number of areas around Whitehall, other departments where grants have been reduced. But from 15 onwards, we decided to increase the defense budget. Second, we have taken the fight to Daesh terrorism. Mm-hmm. We're part of a huge international coalition that has now seen Daesh lose control of the cities it captured in Iraq and some of those in Syria, and some 3 million people who used to live under Daesh rule are now free to get on with their lives. So those would be two particular things I look back on with pride.
Absolutely fantastic. Now, of course, moving on to a slightly different topic, we are currently in the month of October, which is over here, a British, as they celebrate it over here, it is Black History Month.
Yes.
And again, the armed forces have received a huge amount of criticism in relation to race relations. And I will say that this is according to Daily Express. Back in 2016, September 25th, an article was written, and it said that the amount of minorities in the armed forces were not as high as they could possibly be. And you were quoted as promising to increase the number of ethnic minority recruits by the end of the decade in an effort to make the Army, Navy, and RAF better to reflect the makeup of the UK. So what schemes are currently in place to target and recruit minorities?
Well, first of all, I've set a target. Mm-hmm. Recruitment at the moment is about 8% of our armed forces. People coming in to join the armed forces are Black, Asian, or other minority ethnic. That's not good enough. That doesn't properly reflect the strength of these minorities in Britain. And our armed forces need to reflect the makeup of the society that they're defending. And, of course, if they don't recruit more proportionately, they're losing out. They're missing the talent that's available. So I've set a target that at least 10% must come from these different communities by 2020, and we're now at 8%. So we're on the way, but I want to see us make more progress. I hold the three service chiefs to account. I see them every quarter. I ask them to reassure me of their plans to recruit more. And I also want to see more Black and Asian and ethnic minorities move through the ranks. I think one of the best ways to get people interested in a career in the armed forces is to see success. So I want to see, you know, a Black admiral. Mm-hmm. Why not an Asian air vice marshal? You know, why not a female admiral? You know, I want to see women too better represented alongside Black and Asians at all ranks of our armed forces, so people can look up to them and say, yes, I want to be up there.
Of And, you know, it's actually fantastic that you said that, because in that same article, it said of the 133 highest ranking officers, all were Caucasian, while only 100 Asian and 60 black junior officers in the Army out of 13,000, which were equivalent to 2.4%. So that was last year. And as you said, things have significantly changed, thankfully, since then. What are some of the ways that the Ministry of Defense actually recruits?
Well, we advertise very heavily. We have marketing in heavily BAME areas, for example. We start to target those areas. We've been setting up cadet units in schools that have high percentages of BAME pupils, for example. I don't like this word BAME, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
We've just announced new cadet units in places like Middlesbrough, Wolverhampton, Bolton, Cardiff, where there are heavy BAME populations. To demonstrate that the armed forces are for everybody and that people from BAME communities should not feel excluded. Secondly, as I said earlier, I want people to see the black or Asian service people getting on, getting into the higher ranks, so they can say, that's where I want to be. I want to be a general. I want to be a brigadier or whatever it is. And thirdly, we should keep, you know, celebrating the success stories. We've had a Victoria Cross winner, Johnson Bahari, who I've met several times, a really inspiring example, particularly to young people, of sheer courage. And, you know, we need to get those stories out there.
Absolutely fantastic. Now, as we start to round up, we are in the year of 2017, almost at the end of the year, actually, because we're in October. What are your hopes and should I say, goals for the coming 5 years or so? Or actually, not coming 5 years, coming next year. What are some of the goals that you've set for the country?
Well, first of all, I've said we want to increase the proportion mm-hmm. of black, Asian, and minority people in our armed forces, and I'm deadly serious about that. I call in the chiefs from each of the services every quarter, and I want to see that 8% figure get up very rapidly now to the to at least 10% and see more of them achieving senior ranks. I would also, in the final few months before we finish commemorating the end of the First World War, I also want us to do more to recognize the role of people who came from Africa, from the West Indies, to serve in the First World War and indeed in the Second World War. Now, we opened a new memorial. We unveiled a new memorial. I laid a wreath at Windrush Square with the Mayor of London earlier this summer. But I still feel there's part of that history that is not well understood of just how many people volunteered and came forward from what was then the Empire and came to play their part in these two terrible world wars. So I want to see what more we can do over the next few months to get that story better told.
Of course. And finally, as you just rightfully mentioned, and that's, I think it's a fantastic place to end, if you were given the opportunity to be able to share those stories, what mediums would you use or what ways would you do?
Well, I'd use some of the outstanding radio channels that are available. And, the broadcast and the newspaper outlets. But I want more people from black and Asian communities to read about success, that you can have a highly valued career in the armed forces, and to understand that the armed forces are for everyone. They belong to everyone. They're here to defend everyone. They're not some specialist reserve for people who went to Eton or happen to be, you know, Caucasian white males. The armed forces are for everybody, and they've got to reflect the society that they serve, and they've got to be, therefore, more representative than they are at the moment. That's my ambition.
Well, thank you so, so much, Mr. Fallon. This has definitely been an interesting conversation. I've been Kalisha Johnson, and we have, of course, been speaking with the Secretary of State for Defense, the Right Honorable Sir Michael Fallon.